industry that is frustrated in as far as availing themselves for consultation. So the work must be seen as a positive coercion of encouragement towards participation in this regard. So that's why we think that the work can be left in. We don't think that it necessarily makes any harm when it is there than when it is not available without any persuasive will to encourage the industry to actually participate. In clause 25, there has been a proposal that we delete paragraphs M, N, and O of section 103. Now, section 103 deals with the aviation securities responsibilities of the department. This paragraph, we are deleting them primarily because we are removing them from the Act to the DOT whilst before they were handled by SACAR. And we believe that they remain an integral part of the mandate that SACAR has to deal with other than the DOT. So it is for that reason that we are removing them from that, from the current Act, and also leaving them for SACAR to deal with. And as far as the need for assurance that the existing consultative structures will remain in place, we think that that assurance is sufficiently covered by paragraph 1 SS in sections 155, if you look at clause 60 of the current bill. So in this regard, we think that that assurance is sufficient. And the law, not only in terms of clause 60, implies it, but it is actually explicitly provided for in this regard. It was said that it is not clear on what basis the amendment to the regulation can be made in respect of user fees. Now, the user fees are contained in the civil aviation regulations, but necessarily in the principal act. But before increasing any fees or changes, SACAR's request has to go through the minister and then ultimately get permission or concurrence of the National Treasury. Now, the percentage increase is approved by the National Treasury on a three-year basis, and so that we don't do the current annual thing that is currently happening now. And therefore, the adjustment of the actual figures in line with the Treasury approval will then follow this process. The revised figures are submitted to the Minister for approval, and since the Minister of Finance would have already approved at that time, the percentage increase is no longer becomes necessary to seek concurrence again and again. So thus, we are trying to simplify the principle and make it more easier. But I must also hasten to indicate that these two, when the single transport economic regulator bill ultimately comes, and this is dealt with in the regime for determination of tariff, that bill may have any impact on this one. But however, for now as it stands, we are simplifying the procedure that on a three-year basis. Then there were proposals or submissions made in as far as the spelling error that was picked up in the bill on the issue of an aerodrome vis-a-vis the aerodrome. We agree with that observation and we will correct the word wherever it appears in the bill to replace it with aerodrome. An independent aviation consultant and a Mekawa retiree, Renny Van Zay, was of the view that we needed to split the position of the commission and that of the CEO. Well, where we are sitting, because of cost and related aspects, the cost-benefit analysis and the scale we apply, we think that there's no splitting of the two positions. Currently, what exists is that it's provided for as the title of director, as the head of administration of the Civil Aviation Authority. But however, this brings a lot of confusion if you consider that in the public service, a director within the SMS means something else compared to what we're dealing with. The commission and CEO we are not necessarily changing the character and the form of what the work is doing, but we are putting it to bring a greater clarity and distinction between what happens in the public sector and what this bill intends to deal with. Dr. Vermeulen was of the view that there was lack of consultation with the users and that the consultation of the department focused on only industry organizations. Well, if you may recall, the bill was originally published for public comments, and then it was also published in the Gazette, and it was also published on the SACA website, calling on all stakeholders to submit comments. So, naturally, and the principle at law is that ignorance of the law is not concerning the defense itself. We presume, and the presumption is that when the Gazette is published and we call for comments, that those who are interested parties then do revert and make inputs, and do so. And more so when, if you are really interested in the affairs of SACA, and if we publish also on that website, we take it that from a dissemination of information point of view we have. So what is actually raising is not necessarily a challenge to the legality of the process, but is actually raising a concern of how far we could have done or how much more we could have done to reach out in this area. The other issue that was pointed out was the issue in respect of KEMA and SAA Technical, and to try and say that there was an overreach, a regulatory overreach on the part of SACA. And we think that the comments that were made in this regard are not matters of the law. They are actually issues of operation of SACA, and they are administrative questions that can be dealt with appropriately by budget, by the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, and that where he is really concerned, he can actually raise such matters through budget and have the decisions made by SACA in respect of the two matters he had raised to be reviewed in this regard. Again, Chair, there was the issue about the bill that it did not reflect South Africa's implementation of liberalization of markets. Now, this we see as the comments in general, because the bill cannot deal with matters of that nature. It seeks to regulate. However, policy choices are made by government from time to time in terms of what approach to adopt or not. And it is at that level of policy review that matters can be looked at in this regard. There was also the issue of withdrawal of designation of inspectors, authorized officers and authorized persons, and the issuance an amendment or withdrawal of technical standards. Now, the designation of inspectors is a labor relations issue, as far as we see within SACA. It therefore cannot be put within the jurisdiction of an appeals committee. It will create a very unusual, actually even quite an unworkable scenario. An appeals committee is there to receive appeals and to deal with that. The appeals committee cannot on its own be a party to designate inspectors in this regard. And we think that this is best handled in accordance with labor legislation and policies, and that the commissioner could have the discretion whether to designate an authorized person to assist him or her in the discharge of the duties. So naturally, we don't think that is a matter that can be dealt with in regard to that. H.T. Payne raised general comments on operations of SACA, and again, we think that those matters, we will root them within the department to ensure that the relevant branch deals with them, and that they were not necessarily related to any specific clause within the bill. And we will deal with the consensus he has raised on the general operations in that regard. Dr. Brandsackling stated the issue of a definition of aircraft in flight as contained in the bill, and that he had indicated that this was not in line with the accepted definition in the American FAA regulations, and also Annex 1 of the ICAO. Now, Annex 1 of to the Chicago Convention of ICAO does not actually contain a definition of aircraft in flight. We combed it through to see what he was referring to, and we looked at it, and then we looked at this as a matter of civil aviation security in the definition, and the document that contains the definition of aircraft in flight is actually the protocol to amend the Convention on Offenses and Certain Other Acts Committed on Board Aircraft. And this was concluded in Montreal on the 4th of April 2014. And we took that definition verbatim from that protocol. And we think that it is desirable for us to keep it exactly that way for consistency. What he had referred to, and we also do not think that we should simply copy and mimic exactly what the Americans are saying. We rely more on ICAO than on what a specific country may want to say or do in this regard. Now, on the issue of the SACAR board, what they have presented in this regard, we have looked at the issues that they have found, from the issue of ring fencing, of collection of funding and money, issues pertaining to the failure to pay over the amount within 21 days as prescribed, and the remedies that are there. Particularly their proposal, in essence, for them to be regarded as a preferential creditor in cases of liquidation, insolvency, business administration, and so on. I think the real test case being the current scenario with SAA being under business rescue, and with the business rescue practitioner not paying over the monies to SACAR as is required and within the prescribed period. Only now we realize that there is no legal remedy to deal with that. The remedy the board proposes is that of where they are treated as a preferential creditor. This, we can deal with it in this law, and we can accommodate it via a schedule. But we would need concurrence of the Department of Justice, and we will write a letter to the Department of Justice that they do not oppose, because they are the people to champion amendments to the Insolvency Act and all of the related legislation. And therefore, where that happens, once we put the schedule to this, it will automatically, by consensus with them, amend the other laws, the insolvency laws, to allow for SACAR to be placed as a preferential creditor. So it's a simplified way of dealing with this, and in the schedule it will indicate that once ratified, this will amend Section 1 of the other law. So, but we will need concurrence of the Department of Justice to achieve that reality. But we do accept the what SACAR board has put forward. Chair, the other key thing that was raised was in respect of Section 155 and the subsequent paragraph that follows, and this speaks to the levies and those people who collect money. Airlines collect revenue actually of SACAR and have to pay it over from ticketing fees and all of that. And we accept the proposal that they are putting forth of the establishment of a structure that could bring together aviation role players and also to look at the issues of transformation in this regard. We duly accept the suggestion of the board, and we suggest that at the end of that subsection we insert a clause that deals with this proposal in this regard. On the issue of the insolvency, I've spoken about that, but obviously, consequentially, we'll need to amend the insolvency. Okay, There were general comments made by Mr. Viaramusi, and in which he made comments to the effect that transport industry should be managed by a competent personnel. We see the comments and we note them, but we realize they are of a general nature, which does not specifically deal with any specific thing. Obviously, the competency of whether people are appointed correctly or not is dealt with by other pieces of legislation and not necessarily this one. And Mr. Craig stated that the bill seems to be replacing the protocol with the transit agreement. We do not agree with him. The bill is not replacing any protocol with the transit agreement. The transit agreement is an appendix of the Chicago Convention, and it's also available on the ICAO website. The SACAR and DOT can provide a copy on request for this, but we are not replacing any. In fact, we are domesticating the Chicago Convention, and with it, all its annexes, appendices will then form part. So there's no replacement of one by the other, and there is no clause specifically suggesting that we are doing exactly that. And that brings us to the end of the comment.
There was a question for clarity that was asked to DG by Honorable Manu. Did you get it earlier on?
About the input that was supposedly to be made by Mr. Mashaba.
Was withdrawn, and why didn't you respond to it?
Chair, is it not best if Mr. Mashaba answer the question of his withdrawal?
Honorable McDonald.
Morning, Chair, thank you. Thank you, DG, for your presentation. DG, I just would like some more comment on two issues, please. On the comment of Air van Sail, the independent aviation consultant and a KO retiree, could I be provided with, don't have to answer me right now, in writing would also be sufficient, the area in the ICAO that Reni van Zyl is referring to, so that I can compare the two, because I don't have the, I have to go verbatim on what you said here, and I would like to just check on that. And then regarding the comment on Dr. Brian Suckling regarding ICAO Annex 1, I've just read the Annex 1 definition of FCL 1.001 definition, and the way I see it at the moment, I am a little bit in agreement with him. So if I can just have a little bit of an a broader answer, if it's possible, DG, because according to the ICAO Annex 1 definition, JAR FCL 1.001, they've got a way broader definition of the term aircraft or heavier than aircraft. If we can then maybe just have, you don't have to answer me right now, DG, you can maybe do some research and or resource your research department and then maybe just reply within writing. Thank you, DG.
Honorable Hansinger, Honorable Mabena, Mondise, I take it that is the last hand. Honorable Mayor, you're fine. You're
no,
happy. Okay. Oh, no, that's okay. I'll give you that time when you're there.
Because no problem to collect the money, to transfer the money. Why did they wait so long before the act?
Okay. Honorable Amsinger?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I would appreciate an evaluation from the department's perspective of the replacements of sections 156 right down to 162 with obviously what is presented here, amendment 155. But then my question is about the balance between what was there and what we have now. And yes, the quick answer is it's an adequate balance and everything that was there before is now, but it's not the impression which the industry has. And, you know, what sort of engagement or scrutiny was there to then get to the point where one should accept that the department does feel that there is adequate balance in the replacement. What was the consideration in the design to then suggest a trust account and be so specific as to say a trust account, because a trust account is a very particular type of account, so obviously they were sort of a consideration about this, so also because a trust account then has a whole list of requirements in how it should, so why is a trust account then regarded as the adequate and appropriate vehicle for parking funds and capital then? Section 15 deals with the appointment of the minister or the minister which appoints and has the mandate to replace members, but I still need to find the appointment part of the which states that the minister appoints. There's reference to replacement by the minister and that the minister is mandated to replace. Where does it say that the minister appoints? One general remark which I'm very sympathetic to, and I'm sure the department is as well, is the concern, given the number of suggested commissions that would, or committees that would be appointed to execute the functions, shouldn't one also then consider a communications committee that would, on a permanent basis, have the obligation to report to the minister and communicate to the bigger world about and if there are incidents or accidents or crashes. Wouldn't it convey a change of direction in terms of having the opportunity then to craft a new design to then also include a standard standing committee then, if you like, which will deal with communication in cases where we would have might never occur crashes and accidents, etc., which could be part of Article 41. Then, in terms of the conditions under which the future act would give execution rights or the ability then to still get paid. Those are under three very specific conditions, which are if a company would be placed under liquidation, business rescue or administration. Now all three of those conditions are very specific and particular operational statuses which demand as prerequisite the court order. And we are often challenged by fancy footwork and all sorts of legal maneuvering, so that if one then would know that you would need a final court order, and we have to deal with delay tactics, which is quite common, you know, when people want to avoid payment, shouldn't one be a bit more specific and not make it conditional to what we see now? Because all of those processes can be manipulated And therefore, what we seek to achieve could then be avoided totally, simply because you need a court order. And if the court order isn't there, or if the formal status of being placed under administration or liquidation or business rescue, if that condition isn't there, then you've got no access, which then avoids what we're trying to achieve. I'm still struggling with the remarks around the impression which we got through public participation of what is perceived a move from a strict, rigid structure to a discretionary structure. And I'm asking myself what elements in the design would give comfort, because in making the statement, I then also realize that even if you go through very formal processes and you ultimately land up with an appeals process, I know this happens to people on stages, so I don't know why it's happening. There's some other interference. Civil aviation listening in or because that's interesting. But just to finish the statement, or the concern is, even if you go through appeals process, at the end of the day there is some form of discretion that would apply. And so I would just ask the department then to consider, for the sake of the general concern, to consider some aspects and elements that would at least convey in the design something around standards that would be understood and that would be executed in a way that is predetermined and known, so that people know when they apply or enter into a safety or a aviation participation process in terms of the application, that these standards are known before the time. Because what we hear is that the standards, there isn't a standard, and what applies to the one doesn't necessarily apply to the other applicant. That's what we hear, and it's a concern, and certainly in the opportunity then for a redesign, one could consider these things. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. I think my remark is just on the issue of, because I see that from the presentation the department was dealing with the submissions which were made. I think these were written submissions and the presentations that we got on the 4th. And also, in part, I see some of the comments that we made as members didn't make it and find expression in the presentation. And the immediate assumption is that the department was strictly dealing with the return and the people that made presentations on the 4th. If that's the case, then, Chair, I just like one to check on a few things here. One, on the issue of regular updates, I think also if you look at the presentation on slide number 4, I had also made, I don't know if it would be prudent or not, my colleague spoke about establishing a communications committee that will communicate to the public out there as a matter of importance if an aircraft is down and all of those things. But then would it be prudent as well that the Portfolio Committee on Transport be given, you see, you want us to assist you with SACA becoming a first preference creditor. We want you to assist us as well, that we become first preference in terms of communication. Why am I saying this is the aircraft that belongs to SACA the one that claimed the lives of three pilots. We learned of that over, you know, by chance. Just get home, I find it on the news is there. There's a media statement, press conferences that are being done. But when SACA needs to present the financials, they come to the committee. Annual performance, they come to the committee. So up until today, we are yet to get any presentation whatsoever from the department or from SACA, giving us an update to say, this is what happened, this is where the investigation is at. Obviously, the investigation has not been concluded. Once the investigation has been concluded, we'll come back to you and present the full report. As far as the Portfolio Committee on Transport is concerned. So, as part of the regular process, I see that it's covered on an extension, but doesn't cover the committee, unfortunately. So that's the position to say we should also be afforded an opportunity to be given first preference in terms of communication so that we can, you know, understand what is going on as far as that, as those issues are concerned. And one of the issues was, there was a challenge that SACA said there was when they made the presentation. One of it was that the stakeholders involved, not all of them, they make payments within 21 days. And when I asked for the breakdown in terms of the, is it the majority of airlines, in terms of the passenger safety charges that they need to make over to SACA, you know, discovered that, well, a good number of them, they do make it in 21 days, but there are culprits that don't come through within the 21 days. This is over and above a situation where an airline is placed under business rescue, under administration, or the airline goes under. Now, in that situation, we need to be prudent as well that we also factor it into legislation, some severe penalties for airlines that default or airlines that don't keep to the regulations, that don't comply within the 21 days. You know, if one was to be extreme, I would say an airline that fails to make those passenger safety charges or to SACA, because that money does not belong to them. It actually belongs to SACA. So logic says it must pay it over to SACA within the stipulated 21 days. Failure to do so, slap them with 100% charge, penalty charge. I'm sure that would be motivation enough. If I need to pay over 1 million rands within 21 days, and then on the 22nd day I hadn't made that payment, then I might need to pay 2 million rands. It would definitely encourage me to make payment within the 21 days. Otherwise, it makes no financial sense. Now, let me move on to the to SACA being the preferred creditor in the event where the unfortunate happens, where business airlines unfortunately do not work. As you also pointed out, G, that the Insolvency Act, you will need to canvass other committees, other departments. As far as we're concerned, with us here, we can influence the process. But as far as it goes, I think if that would help the case of SACA, then that's good. One other issue was that the DOT, in terms of their grants, you give about 30 million rands a year to SACA in terms of to run AIIT, the accident, incident, investigation, what's the thing? The last thing. Investigation department, or division, sorry. So the issue now is, in terms of ASIP, is it feasible to divest the full grant that as a DOT you give to AIIT and you take it straight to ASIP? And also, can you give us a business case in terms of how will this animal that is ASIP look like? management structure, in terms of organogram, if at all you want to venture in that direction. Because why am I saying that? Is that what we are suggesting is that ASIP should be completely independent of SACA, and it should not in any way have any operational or administrative relationship with SACA, unless as and when the issues of incidents and accidents, where obviously SACA is a key stakeholder which they must engage with. But a situation where an ASIP employee and a SACA employee are paid from the same payroll, when someone is to apply for leave, they must apply for leave at SACA, and someone at SACA must approve the leave of someone at ASIP, it also tends to compromise the entire process. We want complete independence of the issues. Yeah. yeah, I think that's yeah. No, that's my deposition, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. On page 8, under SACA Board, it said authorities entitled, the Civil Aviation Authorities entitled as a preferential creditor to recover any such money, fee, charges, or levy so collected by such a person. My simple question would be that I have never heard in South Africa that a person who has squandered money has to pay back unless if this time drastic steps are going to be taken. Then is SACA Board going to have a mandate on this matter of recovery of money, or is it going to be the same as what is actually happening at Zondo Commission, which is taking a long time before dealing with the people? Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my first question is directed to you, Chairperson. It's the only stakeholder that we engage with. It's only this is the one that we receive. And other Chairperson now are going to go to provinces to hear the output, the input from other stakeholders, and for the presenting chairperson, I'm trying to check the response, but I couldn't hear the response that was submitted by doctor, where he was talking about the. If you can check the last presentation on page 10, ex post factors, the CEA's appeal decision implied that there was unlawful and unnecessary grounding of an airline by the SACA, unnecessary damage to consumers, damage to foreign tourism and connectivity. I'm trying to check the response because I didn't see it. Or sometimes, and the other one, Chairperson, is on page 15, where he's talking about African liberalization measures. The bullet one, South Africa has an political level agreed to implement the YD, SATAM, and the African Continent Free Trade Areas, which have safety, technically, and operationally supervisory implications. if you cannot check the responsibles, thank you.
Siyabonga Mondisi sikuzwile ba I think I can see the DG's trying to gain some strength and energy. I'll talk about the process after this, the process of the same bill. My own understanding, Honorable Mondisi, is that we are at a level where we're entertaining out of the stakeholders, those who have made written, and we're also available for oral presentation. Last week's meeting was calling those who were prepared to come and do oral presentation. Those who just did written submission, the department is now giving its response. So the processes will be as deliberating going further. We have passed that process where we'll be going to provinces on this piece of legislation. That's where we are. It won't go to the province. The dealers will get approved. The others, we had agreed that those who are still open to processes, we will go to provinces, remember. But this one, I think it is past that stage. Am I correct, Advocate?
Chair, as I understand it, it's not necessarily that it's past the stage for the committee to make the decision. It's whether or not the bill calls for further engagements, in the opinion of the committee. In this bill, for example, it is in some aspects you will have concurrent functions on civil aviation, but this bill's amendments are more on a national level if we look at the amendments. So it'll all depend on the members' view, and the parliamentary legal advisor will be joining us soon. He's just stuck in another meeting. He'll be better able to assist members on that question. But procedurally, it's up to the committee chair.
So at this stage, we can deal with the bill to its logical conclusions, should we wish to do that. You ready? Did you now ready? Energy back, relaxed. Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The issues raised are considered. Maybe I must start first with the issue of the committee submissions, the comments made by the committee. Those comments, we have noted them, Chair. But in order for us to factor them in and deal with them, we've got to receive them formally from the chair as the comments of the committee on the bill. Otherwise, we didn't until the committee itself has ventilated on them and agreed when Julie gives them to us. So for this reason, we have not yet dealt with them as such. But should they be forthcoming as formal comments of the committee, in fact, the real procedure that we will then have to sit with the parliamentary law advisors and then have to factor them into the as such. And it must also be recalled, Chair, that accordingly, once we have factored those things in and the processes that we are now, the committee is satisfied that it has finished the engagement. Whatever becomes like the last, how this thing looks like, once the committee has made its input and it has been incorporated, is what then we will take as the gospel truth of that, because it is actually, in terms of the separation of powers, the duty of Parliament to write laws. We can only introduce them and say this is what is desirable, but it's Parliament that has the last prerogative in that regard. So that's the first point to make. The second part, Chair, let me deal with the issue raised about the fact that the bill in no way shows that the appointment is made by the minister. We agree. And in my presentation, I said that we will add the phrase by the minister to indicate exactly that. So we accept the comment, and we will subsequently put it in. Which brings me to the next issue about the would it not be better to be a bit more elaborate and wide so that we don't straitjacket ourselves in the three categories of when can intervention be sought if there were to be delays and delaying tactics in terms of court processes. We were actually trying to avoid exactly that. In fact, we felt that giving an open-ended power may not be the best thing to do in this regard. So that's why we wanted to narrow it, so that it is a bit more reasonable and it can pass constitutional muster quite easily. I do hear what the matter is, but I think we shouldn't put aside the fact that even in the current legislation and even in this bill we're proposing, the remedies are still open to SACCAR. I think it must be remembered that one of the important remedies for SACCAR to recover money is actually of grounding of the aircraft for non-payment. So the airline may be grounded because it has not paid. SACCAR sees this as the last draconian measure, because in other instances, I can give you an example. Right now, SA Express owes SACCAR. If SACCAR was to say, because we have not received the money from SA Express, and therefore we are grounding them, chances are that with such tight cash flow they are in, they will never fly again. They will lose revenue for a week and lose, and they will not then be able to pay for fuel. They will not be able to pay. They will never rise again. So we would have put a final death nail in some of the aircraft, in some of the airlines. So that measure, we see it as a last resort, although it is available to SACCAR. But we wanted an intermediate measure, which of a treatment as a preferential creditor, within which then you are required, even under those difficult circumstances, that as you put, you line up the creditors, SACCAR must come on top. And then you have to pay them first, and then you can then look at how you pay the others. I think that's the whole purpose of what we're trying to do. But in no way does it take the other remedies away. The remedies will remain in place for them to do that. Which then also answers a portion of what Honorable Mabena has raised in this regard. The law and the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act requires that, and even the entire legal jurisprudence is based on the principle of consumerism. You can't, for an offense of this nature, become that draconian. And it will be kicked out of the Constitutional Court as quickly as it came in, because you will not justify such unreasonableness of things such as 100% penalty for non-payment within after 21 days. And this is also dealt with by other laws. The National Credit Act provides for all of this, and what you do with the person who's owing you, you don't abruptly, you know, just a sledgehammer. You write to them, you remind them, you are owing me, and you have a to and fro. And if they protect themselves from you by asking or declaring themselves to be under business rescue, then another procedures kick in, or business rescue by the company. and then you are also supposed to observe all of that. So, and during that period, they are blocked by legal protection against you, and that is why we list all of those circumstances under which they can hide under all of this, to say, even when you are hidden there, please treat us as a priority in dealing with the matters, because the other legal edifices can be ignored. So the penalties are there already, and even in the schedule that we speak about, which the Minister of Finance actually does that, provides for that, including what the National Credit Act provides as reasonable interest that you may charge, because people must remember that interest itself on non-payment is actually a I think we must note that clearly it's a penalty. And you actually say, had I received this money on time and I put it into an account and at a bank, it would be making so much money for me in return. And here are my instruments that I have, and I also ask for an opportunity cost, and then you charge way above what you may have gotten out of a normal bank transaction when you have banked the money. So that's also consumer rate. And if you look at some of the tables in the credit act, it provides for the calculation of reasonable interest. So I think that too must be considered, that if you feel remedies available to SACAF. Then it brings me to the issue of why the trust account. Indeed, the trust account, Chair, we purposefully chose it because we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. Already with trust accounts and money is in trust, there are regulations already turned out. The court is already involved through the office of the Master of the High Court on that. The inspection of trust accounts are already there in place and all of this. And that gives us certainty over just a normal account, because then you'll have to activate powers of attorney across each and every single one of them just for you to have right of sight. But when it's a trust account and the trustees are appointed in this regard, which may also be a board committee sitting as a trustees to that trust account, then they have a direct line of sight and oversight over what happens to the money system. So that's why we chose it purposefully in this regard. And we didn't want to create a totally new chapter dealing with all of that. We just chose a vehicle that already exists and is already well regulated in this regard. Then there was the issue of why should we have a communications committee? The responsibility is provided to the minister in law. He's the accountable official in terms of the constitutional arrangements of our country. And there's an executive, president and appoints ministers, and they are accountable to parliament, to the representatives of the people in this regard. And therefore, because of that, it will be quite peculiar, Chair, and how far will we go down that road, of where we legislate what and what can be said and how, and to what extent and to who first. I don't think we can go that far. I think right now it is clear, and constitutionally also implied, that the minister accounts to this committee, and that the committee is free at any time to schedule and call the minister to account on whatever matter that is related to transfer that the committee feels and deems fit. So the fact that there has not yet been a report on the recent accident of SACA is only testimony perhaps to the hard schedule of the current committee and what it's dealing with. And I don't think that it is on any desire or for non-compliance, and had any such request at any given point been done, the report could have easily been shared, and the processes and what was happening could be done. So it is in that way, Chair, and I don't think that that can be part of the legislation in this regard. On the issue of the recovery of money and the waste of time, the truth is, as I've indicated, SACA has other remedies including if there's a repeat offender and all of this, all of that, that they can ground an aircraft. An airline in order to force collection. So it's not just an endless thing. Somewhere you draw the line after you have acted reasonably by giving notices and what, and there's non-compliance. Then you can reach that sledgehammer position where you say, now, this is where I draw the line in the center. And I think that is the basis of why. On the issue raised by Honorable Hansinger about the standards and that the application seems inconsistent and that the industry believes that they are unknown, well, I beg to differ. I think that that's not the actual standard and practice. But in any case, if for argument's sake that was the truth, there are procedures by which stakeholders and airlines can actually lodge their complaints with ICAO if they think that the rules are being applied differently. And SACAR may be sanctioned as a regulator for that by ICAO. But secondly, in our own legal jurisprudence, whatever SACAR does, and if it treats two parties in the same position differently, the aggrieved party has a right. And that's why in here we're putting a mechanism for an appeals committee. They have a right to appeal the decisions to SACAR, but even further, the Constitution guarantees the right for access to court. And people may, on the basis of the promotion of administrative effect, apply to the court to have the decisions they are unhappy about be reviewed. More so if they think that they are being applied inconsistently and incorrectly. But the standards are there, and they are standards of ICAO. Everybody is privy to them. And I would not know why it would be believed that they do not exist or they are unknown, because the standards are there for everybody to see them. And if the issue is inconsistency of application, then the first part of my answer covers that. The last, there was an issue about why has SACAR waited so long for the act? Well, there's always a time. Sometimes you have as a soccer player, a niggling injury, and you think in the best interest of the match, you play up until the match finishes. You may end up doing more harm, or you may end up assisting the team to win. But sometimes the injury is just so well that you can't wait. You just immediately have to pull out of the match and not play. So the question always is balance of determination of what. And now that we have seen, and with the recent ICAO convention, that there is now need, there's always been smaller things, including this issue of collection of money within 21 days. There's always been a big challenge. But with the recent ICAO thing and the need to change a whole host of things, there's been now just too many things to deal with, which are a problem that now warrants that we can review the entire bill. The last thing was on the issue of whether ASIP, what animal are we building here, and so on. Let me tie this with the current accident investigation department. Because after the two previous ICAO conventions took place, originally it must be remembered that the ICAO never saw a problem with the regulator also doing the investigation. Primarily that was what it was. But it was on the push of the Americans, largely, and they had just repositioned the NTSB, the National Transport Safety Board, they had just positioned them the one that promoted the ICAO and argued the principle of conflict of interest and said, no, there was separation of this. And ICAO agreed with them, and the convention approved that there must be a separation. And this came from the Chicago convention, so hosted by them, the Americans. So the separation occurred, and overnight, many poorer countries couldn't afford two standalone entities of that nature. And so they dropped their investigation capacity and focused fully on the integrator. And as it would be, as fate would have it, each time there were accidents, they now had to rely on hiring other people, including Americans, to do the work. when that issue of separation was first, our government here also attempted to do the separation. The department approached the treasury. There's a section in the PFMA that requires that if you are to create a new public entity, you actually require the approval of the treasury. And now there is a feeling within the entire government that the public entities are just too many and too fragmented, and that isn't it time, and they are also costly, isn't it time to consolidate some of them and so forth. So this matter came at a time when this debate was raging, and so the issue of its separation became a big issue. But Treasury refused a new public entity that will only focus on investigation, and considering the number of accidents that really occur in South Africa, and keeping such a huge edifice for purpose of that, including a CFO, HR practitioners, all of that, and the huge machinery to service this. Rather, we retain the skill of the actual investigators, but then their support functions are dealt with elsewhere. The question was, where could they be attached? And the department said that shouldn't then they should come to the department and be stationed there. And the treasurer was of the opinion that no, leave them with SACA because of the closeness of mandates. Leave them with SACA, and their budget must be ring-fenced. And for reporting purposes, they must report directly to minister and not necessarily to the board of SACA. But their servicing in terms of office space, all of that and so forth must be done by SACA. So this is the determination that was put before Parliament and that was tabled. In fact, we still have those determinations that were done back then. It was done on the 12th September 2016 and it was tabled by the Minister of Finance within this. And it was on the announcement tables and committee reports that came through back then. And the annexure was given as a ministerial order on accident and investigation. That was done. This is still valid and pending until ASIP actually kicks in and changes this. So while the order is clear, and it's an order of Parliament, that the two are separate bodies, and they are two independent bodies, but they share administration. So that's the current scenario. Right up until now, ICAO has never questioned, and this was also submitted to ICAO to inform them that now we are a competent authority to investigate accidents on the basis of this administrative separation between the two. And ICAO has duly accepted the arrangement. So where we are sitting, there's no conflict of interest from ICAO's perspective and our own in terms of the arrangement the country has taken. So right now, with ASIP, we are negotiating with the treasury. We want to strive for the full separation, where it will be a totally standalone thing. We have been asked to do a motivation, do the costings and the issues you raised. We have done so. But I must ask them to tell the committee that there is limited appetite in the treasury to have a full-blown independent new public entity. They are looking at different aspects. We are exploring possibilities of a trading entity. We are also looking at the possibility largely of a new division of the department to deal with this. And the biggest motivation of Treasury is that the functions of the department have previously been hollowed out, and that there have been created this many entities, and it's just too cumbersome, and why is the department not building internal capacity to handle matters of this nature? The quality of the investigators and all of that must remain what it is, and however the administration must be dealt with in that way. So we are concerned, we are not in favor of the second proposal of a division of the department, and largely because when an accident has occurred, you actually need very quick turnaround times to respond. respond. And unfortunately, with the PSMA, it's not easy for a department. You have to go for quotations, do that. Whereas with them, their policies can allow for deviations and to do things much more quicker. And that's why it was attached to SACA. So that is still being worked out, the final nature of the beast. But we know what the beast must do, and that's what the law will prescribe, what that beast must do. Its final form is what will be negotiated based on available capacity and budget. We have tagged the bill as Section 75 because it deals only with matters that are of national competence.
Just in terms of the engagement now, and as a matter of sort of grasping the whole theme, has there been any calculation from the department side around the full operational cost of a, you know, projected separate entity versus contracting an external investigation team? Because as what we now aspire to do under AT&S in contracting to other countries, I mean, there are other countries that have, you know, very professional investigation teams, and also looking at, thank God for, you know, the only now and again event of a needed investigation in, you know, the discipline which we have in aviation in South Africa. The cost comparisons, have we looked at cost comparisons? Because obviously, as you might know, you know, you're dealing with operational expenses here more than capital expenditure, apart from equipment and so on now and again, which involves a lot more, because you even have to pay investigators while there's nothing to investigate, and, you know, we say thank you for that. The other question also is, in the category, there are three categories of income on civil aviation, two of which involve user fees. What other than pilot fees are covered under the heading user fees in that more or less 15% category of income? And then I would also like to know the fuel levy, which is about 2.8% of your income, whether the portion of fuel levy that goes to civil aviation is channeled directly from the fuel supplier, or is it something that gets paid in addition to the fuel expense at the point of purchasing aviation fuel?
Chair, I'd just like to, while I have the department here, I've just some issue with South African civil aviation that I've just been sent a message about. And I'm just going to deposit with them. They don't have to respond now. Just a parting gift. It's regarding the calibration aircraft that was in a crash, Chair. And although it was a sad and unfortunate accident that claimed the lives of three young, very professional people, we are stuck with a certain ICAO, IATA, ICAO legislation that will kick in about 130 days, about just over 3 months, with the calibration of the runways, especially the international runways, which will make it illegal for international aircraft to land in South Africa if these calibrations are not done within the next 3.5 months. And in the difficult fiscal situation that South Africa currently finds itself in, it is something that we hardly can afford. So if the department can maybe tell us what their strategy is and how they're going to alleviate this problem, because this is now, it's around the corner. This is not something that needs to take days to resolve. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Hansinger, at as I've just indicated previously, when the CAD memo was sent to Cabinet back then on 6 August 2018, Cabinet approved the bill itself and also considered preliminary cost of establishment of a SIC as a standalone thing. However, as I've indicated, Cabinet also approved it with a rider that says the Department of Transport must do further work with the Treasury on the final cost and all of that. So the figure is bound to change in terms of this. Already, the budget of SACAR and the projected future increases were to cover the operations of SACAR and the new amendments that are being made. Safe for ASIC, which now becomes a new thing. Its funding, primarily, in terms of this, is targeted from the user fees. I think it's the passenger safety charges that go with it, and that's what finances it. So once the Treasury and us finalizes the shape and nature of this beast, and we see what costs are, certainly the tariff will either be determined downwards, God forbid, or determined upwards, depending on what the need would be. But certainly that's how it will be funded. So I can't give you a final figure until that has been finalized, but I can tell you the principle of how we're going to go about dealing with it. On the issue of user fees and that, other than the pilots and all of that, they charge for cabin crew licenses, all of that. So it's a whole host of little small percentages, but you try to not overburden the few, but you try to broaden the base, so that you have a wider net on which you can collect lesser but from more people. And I think that is what is covered in the user fees. Then on the issue of jet fuel, is that actually the point of sale? That's where we impose, yeah. Because that's the best way of guaranteeing per liter everyone who has bought. And that's where we will see how much that's worth. And I think that's how it's done. On the issue of calibration, we will not falter on this chair. We will not falter on this. Although that plane went down, and even before when that plane was out of service, and the engines were being replaced and so on, we were hiring calibration aircraft to do the calibration itself, and we were fitting them with the beacons and every other thing that's necessary. So we'll not falter. We will do that. And we have also directed SACAR to finalize the purchase of a new aircraft that they should have long done. So we will not falter. We will meet the targets for all international runways, and we will meet them. Already, we are almost 80% done in terms of that. Yeah, we will. No, maybe just to explain to Honorable McDonald that...
That aid, I did not see, so don't explain.
Done. I was done, Chair. That was my last comment.
I see you are done.
Yeah.
Someone was provoking you. Honorable Matter.
Thank you. Material. Thank you, Chairperson. After listening to the discussion, there is this issue that I want to raise, and if I'm out of order, will tell me. It's not the phone, it's the... Chairperson, when listening to the discussion, we're discussing about the bill with the Department of Transport. And we are making policies, but we don't have those transport in us. I mean, we're talking of planes and aeroplanes. They belong to other departments and not us. But we are making policies and the deals that affect those planes and the aircraft. Chairperson, I know that we're discussing the bill, but that's why I said if I'm out of order, I'll tell you. But my issue is, I think it's high time that we have discussion between those, the other department, because we can't discuss, have the bills, make policies, but not having those airplanes and aircraft. And now we are talking of the resources and everything, the funds, the money, but we don't have that. I think it's time that we discuss about that, so that they belong to transport and we are able to make the bills and know, and making sure that at least that we are discussing, it doesn't affect other departments. And those in other departments, they will be, in fact, they will be implementing the bills that we are discussing and the policies. Thanks.
Okay. Can we take it that we have deliberated and we have asked whatever we wanted to ask from the department? And this thing is, it will go to another stage where we are going to be deliberating, and where we still need the department to explain something we wish. But I must also extend a DG to say, just that maybe the honourable member has gone outside. If we would want to deal with the inputs that were withdrawn, it is absolutely up to this portfolio committee. We may indicate that we want the response of the department on the presentation that was withdrawn, then the department will do so. If we feel like doing that. At this point in time, DG, let's thank you. We're not releasing you. We want to just check whether there's something that we're leaving out from the legal mind, state law advisors here, and the legal team from Parliament is also here. Are you fine? We want to say something so that we close it.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just a comment on the issue of the trust fund and the payment, reserving payment or protecting that money in the trust fund as a preferential creditor in the case of insolvency. That is a new issue, as I read. I just quickly read through the bill. So there's a process for that in Parliament where we go back to the House, get permission for that type of amendment. Possibly if it doesn't affect the tagging, that's not an issue, the classification, and then public hearings, input from relevant departments, Treasury, Trade and Industry, and so on. So just for your information, in terms of programming, thank you.
Baba.
I concur with the problem, the legal advisor chair, that in terms of the rules, I think it's Rule 386. There had to be permission from the House to expand the scope of the bill if the committee feels that it had to accept that particular amendment. Thank you, sir.
Chair, I'm well aware of the fact that if the scope expands on current act and there is an amendment which then demands permission of add a new addition or so on, but this is an all new bill, as I understand it. Why would the argument be that there's an extension of the scope? An extension of the scope of what which existed prior to this bill? I would submit that since nothing existed prior to this bill, there's nothing to extend.
Chair, the way it works is that, or the explanation behind the rule. The rule says that if there is a new matter that a committee is proposing to put into a bill, a new amendment, that's different from the subject matter of the bill, you need permission of the House. The rationale behind that is when we do the first reading in the House is actually mandating this committee to, within the ambit of the long title of the bill, to consider the bill and to report back. So the House is actually saying, if you want to look at the negative side, do not go beyond your mandate. Don't bring in new things which we didn't say, because we don't want to sit here in 3 months' time and you bring a report with completely new things that we're not aware of. That's the rationale behind it. So if you're going beyond what we would call in the long title or the objects of the bill, definitely we get permission from the House, so that the House is fully aware of what the committee is doing. The committee is just an extension of the House. That's the sort of the academics behind it.
No, we do understand we are just an extension of the house. So, yeah. Okay. I think you want to say something quickly?
Yes, Chair. Even for us, we're going to have to go back again to cabinet. And also to prove that last us about this issue, because the clause that has been inserted has a lot of dependencies on the other departments because of the bills that have set. And just this five indicator, we'll have to champion some of that within that confine. So we agree with what is being said, and that's why we were avoiding, knowing how difficult the Treasury is, and knowing that the Financial and Fiscal Commission is opposed to ring fencing of taxes or money. This is going to be interpreted and seen that way. So, and my suspicion is that by the time we come back from our own process, we will not come back happy with this clause. But, yeah, we have to consider the inputs they have been made, and if they are reasonable, we've got to explore them. And I think that was the purpose, but we would not have been the first people as a department directly to have a first port of call. And that's why internally within the department and our agencies, we have to have some housekeeping rules.
All right. I think we've dealt with this matter sufficiently. Can we now move away from this matter? Thank you. Thank you, DG and your team. We shall see you next week. Tuesday. Max Bingley. Thank you with your team. Let's go to the next item. Consideration of the draft committee program for the second parliamentary term. We have the program. Program. It should be in front of you. You can see that briefing by the Department of Transport. 1715 briefing by entities of the department, annual performance plan, business plan, then we can go on in terms of the briefing. Plaza, and you have Airports Company of South Africa, that's Wednesday. And then the following week we have Road Traffic Infringement Agency from 10 to 13 hour testing. From 14 hours we have Road Accident Fund. Then on Thursday, it's consideration of draft committee reports. So it goes. Now what we need to do as we engage on this program, honorable members, first and foremost, we need to agree that we agree with the entities that are there, or we want to add some more entities, and if we want to add, which are those that we want to add, and that will mean we extend sitting hours, and that may actually also invite us to add some day. There is a program, honorable members, have your say. Honorable Hansinger, honorable Mondise, honorable Manu, in that order, honorable McDonald, Arbonne Mazo, Howard Siorokwale, this can not again born. Honorable Ramato, is your hand dancing right now? Is it up? Okay. We'll close with you. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. Question, I see that we've got budget vote from 12 to 22 May, and that we are seizing with engagement of the different departments, which basically squashes our opportunity of engagement up until and before the 23rd of April. Being vote 35 in the process, I'm sure we could extend the time beyond the 23rd of April into May, shortly and up until vote 35 comes up. We don't need to stop our deliberations at the time when budget vote 1 kicks off or 2. We do have more time, because I would argue very strongly that we indeed need to see more of the entities other than just PRASA and Driving License Agency, 18S, SANRAL, CBRT and Road Accident Fund. Then, Chair, I also feel very strongly that there are two reports which we should consider looking at by this committee, not necessarily presented by the department. I think we are quite capable of looking at the reports ourselves and having a debate amongst ourselves on the two reports. The one is the panel van conversion report by the public protector, which was submitted or released in March last year already, with particular conditions to which the department was instructed to adhere to, which ceased more or less in August last year. And again, we're looking at nearly a year after that. So it's really important that we look at that from a committee side, and I would really request your consideration to include that formally in our program. And the other report is the one on the Competitions Commission, which is currently looking at the interrelationship in transport, you know, how commuters perceive the different services, which I find a very interesting current process with interim reports being released, which we definitely need to take notice of. I regard that input as very valuable, given that we are busy with legislation, talking to especially public transport. So those two reports, I would seriously ask your consideration, Chair, and the committee's consideration to include into the report as soon as possible, into the program as soon as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think the first point by Honorable Hansinger, I support it. I think we have agreed that where need be, we will work on Friday. But it appears that we are shy of Friday. So my concern is the following, and it's not included in this proposed program. We have spoken a couple of times in this committee about the need to see the PRASA acting group chief executive officer and have an appreciation of what is happening with. And I don't see it catered for anyway. Number two, we have made a request also to be briefed about accidents in the past festive season and plans of the upcoming Easter, and they are not taken care of anyway. Thirdly, we have requested, and I put it sitting on a time bomb, about the driver's license issuance or the process thereof. It is nowhere in the program. So, Chair, I think we must be honest to ourselves. Most of the things we are raising here, I don't think they are finding anywhere expression. It would appear that somewhere somebody is sitting and deciding this is the direction of the committee, and that is it. And whatever we say doesn't seem to find anywhere expression. That, for me, is a major concern, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Mundi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I want to apologize because I am serving two committees. Some which I see them here, I'm not going to attend them. But only the one that I was checking is that one of the 21st April. The one from 10 to 1:30 and then start again at 2:00. The only 30 minutes. I will. Just checking the tone. But the other Chairperson, I think so. Will be.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of the things that I wanted to raise have been raised. The issue of we're having six entities here and we're having that in that. So I concur with the suggestion that we need to see all the and make use of Fridays as we have agreed. And the other thing is that I don't know whether this has been submitted already to Parliament. If not, is it possible that we have time frame and the issues that we want them to be in the program be submitted to the Secretary? Thanks. Because also the issue of oversight, we have discussed about that. When there is a need, not necessarily the planned one, but if there is something that is happening that or has happened and we need to have the information on that, I think we can just do oversight. So that's why we spoke of the oversight that we announce and unannounced. So that's why I'm raising this, that if it's possible, can we make inputs?
the DG just he just fell short of saying that as a committee we almost he almost accused us of dereliction of duty, where we could have asked the minister and SACA to come and account and give us details on the accident. So I would also like to devote that onto our program. We also said that was until now I yet to receive any update whatsoever as far as that is concerned. And also with the issue of the who's that guy? The administrator. We've had Scopa is coming upon me, you know. They've already had discussions with him, deliberated, he presented to them, given them his plans, answered their questions, but he has not done that with this committee. You know, so I think as far as I'm more concerned, it's high time that what we say in the committee takes precedence, and that what we want to give the committee direction to what it needs to do, it needs to be factored into the program, as Honorable Manu is correctly saying. So I think let's put in that either the department or SACA comes and give us an update on the accident, and then also that administrator chair must come and also greet us as a police woman.
Chair, thank you. Most of the previous honourable members have raised most of the alluded to most of the things that I wanted to raise. I do think that we need to spend more time on the annual performance plans and budget of the department. We were so pressed on our last the first budget for the Sport Photo Committee that it was basically a rubber stamp of a budget that we didn't have much deliberation on. And just to spend one day on the budget is going to be, we're not going to do justice to that budget. And I agree with mostly what everybody has said. It seems like the department and some of these entities are not taking this portfolio committee serious at all. We just say things and we repeat things, and I know of five instances that the department was supposed to respond in writing to questions that we've made that we've not received a single response, and it's been more than 6 months. And I think that type of behavior should be strongly condemned, Chair. And then there's no oversight in this program, and I know that we are stuck in a extremely fast-paced year with elections and leave and whatnot, but we'll be derelict of our duties to oversight on some of the entities. Thank you, Chair.
Well, okay. I think what we are doing here, honourable members, we have taken a decision last week when honourable members were raising issues that let's bring a program into the meeting so that together we can then begin to see in this program the days that we are giving, where do we put what? It means after this, what we had agreed on shall be the order of the day. I'm just saying, the suggestion by Honorable Hansen, I think is what we must try and find each other on. That let's try to extend, although you see the problem there is, which you must anticipate, is that those of us who sit in other committees may be needed actually to go and prepare the others as speakers there. So we may not have a so fruitful kind of interaction beyond the start of the other budgets. That's the reality we're dealing with here. Can we say we'll go on even other members are not there? It means this portfolio committee must reflect on that. If it's our view, then it's our view. We'll carry that view. But from where I'm seated, I think we must be realistic. If we leave each other behind because others are not here, we may disintegrate as a committee in terms of how we move forward understanding issues. So I'm saying even if we consider that, let's minimize to allow these other members who are in other committees to attend properly. I hear the committee as saying, let's take all the entities. Can we go and have a meeting with that? Is that what you want? Honorable Hansing, I don't see your team know this. Can we put all these entities? You must just know that we must be ready and we must be available. Now I don't have a problem, but it will be a mammoth task. Understand that we are saying even on Fridays we'll be here. What you are saying as members of this portfolio committee. Honorable Makosine.
I put Chairperson taking into account that we've got the constitutional work that we're supposed to do. Some of us will not be available. Taking into account that the local government, the local elections are near the corner. Every time on Friday we find that we are here. So decision taken without the members being present will not be binding. Thank you.
Advocate Nell to make some input.
Chief, our dilemma with drawing up the program is the requirement that Parliament has set that we have to have from the 14th of April till the 24th of April, we have to allow for joint engagement between the different PCs and the select committees or the NCOP committees. Now, those committees have an issue also with their membership and the amount of departments that they have to run around and meet with. They basically have to fall in with how our committees are planning it. Valerie and that committee secretary were able to agree on the 14th in the afternoon because in the morning that same committee members have to sit with another department. That is why we have the limited time with the department on that day. But we also have the other issue where our committee report on the budget, the strat plans and the APCs have to be finalized before Parliament starts with the votes. As Mr. Hansinger indicated today there, when they will be starting with the votes in May, which is why we've planned for the adoption of the committee report by the 5th of May. This department's budget vote was quite early in the list last year. So it's not always because we are a high in vote number that we won't be first up in the program at the NA. We don't know exactly when the NA will be calling which departments yet. So we have to plan in anticipation of that aspect. We added the few extra dates because of the concerns of meeting all the entities, but if the committee says plan for Fridays, then as soon as Valerie is back, we can do the required applications to the House Chair to get permission, because we will have to get permission for the Thursdays and the Wednesdays in any event as well. the concern is, as Chairperson indicated, if we don't have six members in the committee, we are not quorate to sit and we cannot start a meeting at all. So we have to have at least six members. So it's very important for members, by looking at the program, please indicate which days you will have conflicts, especially with the entities. We don't have to sit with the NCOP when we work on the entities. The requirement for us is really to sit with them to work on the department. They will fit the entities in as they have time. I think this week already they're looking at the RTMC's annual report that this committee already looked at from last year. This is how they try and space out and catch up. We do have time for members to still give us input on this program, the draft program, and any additions that we make today, because we've programmed the finalization of the adoption of the program for next week. As Valerie always also mentions, that our programs are dependent on the programming committee and the input that we get. So it is a fluid program. It's not cast in stone, but this is our guideline going forward. If the members do agree, for example, to the inclusion of the clauses that SACA made regarding their finances, it might push everything that we've programmed regarding that bill in the program for the second term out, because we might have to allow for the time period to publish those new proposed recommendations. Then we can fit in other meetings in those aspects. Just on talking to the administrator is going to be here on the 14th of April for the strat plan and APP, and because it is his 12-month plan that he has to give members, that is the strat plan for PRASA. So that meeting is where the members will have the engagement with the administrator. We decided to kill two birds with one stone, but I don't like to refer to birds. I'll rather refer to mosquitoes, given the amount of them in the Cape. The same for the concerns regarding the driver license card account. That's why we put those two, suggested to put those two on the first day of engagement. If members feel that maybe we should have them on a Friday, on the full Friday, to sit with them, but we always plan on Fridays. We also plan till about lunchtime to give members the chance to get to the airport and get where they need to for some of the flights that go to the smaller towns and cities. I will knock on wood in the hope that no airlines or routes will be blocked with the COVID virus. That's also something else that we can't foresee in terms of this, but it's something that we also have to consider going forward, Chairperson, that that's also something that might impact the departments even coming out, or the relevant people from the departments being present if there are any of those issues coming up. If members want us to add the Fridays, we can most definitely do so and add it to see all the entities. There's only three that aren't in our list. Ports Regulator, the Railway Safety Regulator, and the other one was SACA, which members have seen now, but in short for the bulk. But we are definitely open to adding all the entities. We were just pressed for time because we only have until the 5th of May. And there is an oversight week at the end of the program. The last page, from the 9th to the 12th of June. But also, as we indicated in the strat plan with members, in many instances when we do apply or do an application to House Chair for oversight, we have to show the progress on the legislation and how far we are with that. So as long as we are up to date with all our legislation, our oversight application should not be a problem.
Chairperson, on average, between each session, we have 3 hours for two entities. Looking at the strat plan, scrutinizing the strat plan, and then having the number of members, you know, in minimum bench, the quorum necessity, we will have trouble getting through a strategic plan with two entities in a 3-hour session, having to deal with two entities in each session. It will be difficult to thoroughly go through that. Furthermore, as a solution, I want to suggest, seeing that the NCOP also has to engage with these entities, why can't we have combined sessions? It will double the time. and we might just be able to fit in more entities, since there is a real desire to engage with all 12 entities, plus the two, which is licensing and National Sea Rescue. So suggestion in terms of providing a solution, consideration to then see the entities with a select committee of the NCOP, and then I already see a challenge, so we will need additional sessions, because some of the entities, especially since the announcement has been made that the administrator will then also be there on the 14th, that would require at least 4 hours just with the administrator, even excluding the engagement with PRASA on the strategic and financial budget plan. Thank you, Jim.
Okay, let's say this, Honourable Member. I think in the main, if we were to consider it, we need two additional days. If we were to consider taking everybody on board. And those days could be Friday. Say, just two Fridays. Can we consider that, Honourable Member? Again, we have panel events, competition in what was competition commission, administrators already here. What was the other one, Honourable Man?
December report on accidents, and they are planned for Easter.
Okay.
And I think Advocate spoke about the DLCA status, that they are coming here, but these two are totally different and they require time. But if they can deal with it when they are here, good luck to them.
Okay. Can we say with those inputs, let's allow this progressive program that it will work on to be revised there and there and see how far. And just remind ourselves when it comes, when they are still kept, it is not because of them. It is because we want to create some space ourselves. This is our program. So from time to time, as we see a space, we try and amend our program and ensure that we are all on board. Is that how we feel? Can we pass that with that? Thank you very much.
Then the last item,
we have two sets of minutes. The 3rd and the 4th of March, the minutes. And then minutes of the 3rd of March, page 1, corrections. Page 2, corrections. Page 3, corrections. Page 4. Any mover for adoption? Honorable Manumi, seconded by Honorable Ramadwa. Yes. If you are many, I choose which one I want on the record. Minutes of the 4th of March, 1st page, correction.
Yes.
Honorable Mani.
Could I propose the insertion on page 1 of the organization and designation of Dr. Fairwater? Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Can I propose the introduction or insertion of the organization and designation of Dr. Fairwater under presenters, page 1.
Right. Page 2. Page 3, correction.
Okay.
Honorable Manu.
under number two, submission by airlines association, I think it's not a true reflection of all what they presented, given the summary. My proposal is that we add on one thing that they had spoken about, which I think is critical, which is user fees. Clarification. In terms of their presentation, they presented it as user charges, consultation process or something like that. All the other four, I think they are, if you look at their presentation, they summarized into five issues and we have listed four. My proposal, therefore, is to add the user fees or user charges. Thank you, Chair.
Any other? Page 4. Any correction on page 4? Page 5? Any mover? Honorable McDonald? Any seconder? EFF?
But Chairperson,
yeah.
No, I do second. I think that I finished it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to check on our first set of minutes. I was not here, but even if I was here, I'm worried about that comment. They say the committee observations and recommendation would be contained in the committee report and the performance of the Department of Transport. And we are therefore not repeated in the minutes. But you see, if we have minutes with a recommendation and observations, I don't think that it will harm, because we will not, on our minutes we have, even our reparations, it contains on our minutes. But when you see this happening like this, sometimes it doesn't make sense. Thank you,
Chair. Yeah, no, Modis, I'm here again. You're not in the meeting. Yeah, we'll take that out. Yeah.
No.
Okay. Honorable members, I think this has to do with how minutes are taken, if I hear you right, which is an issue that we discussed at some point. I know you're going to get a lot of support in this house, unless you want to re-look into that issue and submit differently to the authorities that give us permission to how to deal with minutes. Remember, we're told that there is a format. You still remember, Mundi. So I think let's discuss that issue and close it once and for all. Maybe in the next meeting. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we have arrived at the end. We are going to be representing our different parties in the House today. Let me take this opportunity to congratulate you on your presentation last week. Your presentation as different parties was very progressive. In fact, we from where I was seated, we demonstrated how a committee can actually work with all different members from different parties, being responsible, progressive, and knowing how to differ. I think I must say that. We are going to present today, as said last time, when the need of us to fight arises because of our different parties in that house, let's remember that that's not the end of the work. We still meet here as a community, and as we deal with each other, let's deal with each other responsibly. Come back united as we are united. I think I just needed really to appreciate that fact. Otherwise, those who were happy last time because of Kaiser Chiefs beating Pirates, I'm told that I must remind them that Chiefs was beaten by Hamas during the weekend. Thank you very much. Let me give it. Oh.